Welcome again to the Parenting is Hard Work podcast. I'm here with Elena Svetzlot. My name is Dr. Scott Taransky, and we are your hosts for this podcast episode. And we want to touch a very special area of your parenting today. We want to talk to you about the tension that's often left in the discipline process that takes place after a correction episode. We're going to delve into that. We're going to help you move forward. But Elena, welcome. I'm glad we're back together again today.
Hi, Dr. Scott. It's great to be back and speak to you today about indeed a very important episode in our discipline time. And we call that the positive conclusion. Now, as parents, we often correct our children. And at the end of the correction time, something is missing. We don't always have a good feeling about it. Maybe our child doesn't have a good feeling about it. There's something in the air that's not right. And not always can we put our finger on it. So what we would like to share with you today is a way that's very specifically and biblically designed to make sure that the way we end the time of correction is positive and not only helps the child do better next time, but also helps them train and learn about how to move on in the future.
You know, we devised this positive conclusion after we studied the way God brings about change in us. The words repentance that God uses. Now, we might not use the word repentance for confession or sin with children right away. Those are good words to use, but we don't have to use them every day with a child. But the positive conclusion takes a child through a process by asking the child three questions and making a statement that really follows a godly plan for bringing about change in a child and then helping a child think differently about the next times of life. So I think we should go through these three questions in a statement one at a time, share with you what they are, and maybe illustrate them a bit so you can see their value. But first, let me just put this in the scene. A child has been sent to a break or has had some kind of a consequence or something, and they're ready to re-enter. When the child comes back, and the child should initiate to come back, then we want to say to this child, okay, and then we launch into this positive conclusion with the first question. So we want to position this positive conclusion right after the consequence or the break so the child has a plan for reentry. The positive conclusion is going to take the child in that direction.
Yeah, I want to start with an illustration and share the first question. Say you have two children and they're playing in the playroom and all of a sudden you hear screams and shouts and you go there and try to understand what took place. How do you get to understand that? How do you get to learn about what exactly went wrong? If you ask them, if you ask your son, he's going to start pointing at his sister and tell what she did wrong. And if you start with your daughter, she'll probably point at your son telling exactly the same. So how do you as a parent deal with that situation in a way that's fair and right for your children and for yourself? Well, how we recommend to do it is to start with the question, what did you do wrong? And to start with that question separately, for example, in this example, with each child and ask them, what did you do wrong? So not necessarily focus on what happened that was wrong in the entire scene, but what did the child do wrong? And through this question, what we're actually doing is helping our children practice this, the confession, and actually practice to take the first step and admit the wrongdoing that they have committed.
You see, I think what happens is that parents often want to find out what happened so they can be the judge and, you know, they can kind of discern what we do here and who gets the toy or solve the problem. And so they're often moving to that very question you were cautioning them about, which is what happened here. I just think when you ask a child what happened here or who started it, it just didn't start here. It started yesterday or started, you know, I have twins. It started in the womb, you know. I think it's hard to determine that. I think we get faster if we ask the question, what did you do wrong? It goes right to the heart of this child's problem. Because even if the child only is 10% wrong, let's just deal with that 10% of that child. It is much more effective this way to help a child take responsibility for their part of the problem. So we're trying to start with that first question, what did you do wrong?
Yeah, what I really love about this question is the fact that it starts to help the child understand that there is a wrong and right in how they're doing things. And as parents, we are aiming to, through God's grace, help them learn that and to learn what is wrong and what is right. And when we ask this question, then immediately we are expecting them to point out what was wrong. Now, I will move on to the second question. And this is really a natural question after the first one. What we're going to ask secondly is, why was that wrong? And really what this question does is providing the opportunity for the child to tie the behavior that they had to the values and convictions that we try to develop in their hearts. So, for example, why was that wrong? Why was wrong to push your brother? Well, there are many different ways for that the child can answer, but one of them could be because that is the wrong thing to do, because that's not lovingly. We really want the child to think deeper on why exactly was that not the right thing to do. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that sometimes with younger children, and I prefer to younger children because my child is young, at 3 years and a half, he doesn't really always know how to answer. And it's good, and it's okay for you as parents to help them along the way and give them a hint so they can learn to actually process things and respond the way they should.
I would suggest that if you ask your child a question, what did you do wrong? Or why was that wrong? And the child says, I don't know. Then you tell the child, here's what it is that you did wrong, or here's why it was wrong. And then you say, okay, let me ask the question again. Because when it comes to confession, it's important for the child to actually be able to say what he did wrong, not just agree with what you said, but to actually say it. So what did you do wrong? I don't know. Well, what you did wrong was you hit your brother. I'm going to ask you the question again. What did you do wrong? I hit my brother. It's very valuable for a child to do that. Secondly, when you ask the question, why was that wrong? You're going deeper. Instead of just staying with the behavior, I hit my brother, and you ask the question, why was that wrong? And you find out that it's because it's not being kind, for example. Then now we're dealing with the heart of the situation or the heart of the child, and you're able to address things on a deeper level. I think it's much more effective to ask the question, why was that wrong, than to ask the question, why did you do it? See, sometimes parents ask the question, why do you do it? And it just leads down this path that is unproductive, because what happens is the child then defends himself. Here's why I did it. It was somebody else's fault, and so on. And when we go down that path, it doesn't end. So don't ask the question, why did you do it? Ask the question, why was that wrong? And that will keep you on the track that you want, which is to lead a child through the process of repentance to get where they need to be. So those are your first two questions in this process.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Dr. Scott, because asking the question, why you do that, which is such a natural question for us as parents, is really not all, it's not always the case that children know the answer to it. You know, we are all sinners. Our children are sinners. And only through the grace of God can we change. And so asking ourselves, why did we do something wrong? We don't always know the answers. And so by doing that, we put our child in perhaps a situation where they really don't know. And they might think, oh, there's something wrong with me because I seem to just keep on doing mistakes all the time without really knowing why. And that's the case for all of us. What I really wanted to quickly talk about, Dr. Scott, is the situations in which parents have a hard time to get from their children the answers for these two questions. If they have children which are really difficult in answering these questions or starting this process of repentance, you have a lot of experience working with this kind of children. What do you recommend for these parents?
Yeah, that's a good question, Elena. See, I find that some children, when we use a break, the child's sitting in a break, settling down, they know what's going to happen because this is all part of a cycle. They go into the break, they settle down, they come back, and they're asked these three questions. So children know it. It's expected. This is a normal part of the training of a child when the child is off track or done something wrong. So first of all, if we can help children to expect this as a routine, it makes it a little easier. Now the child knows that she's not going to come back and receive a lecture from dad, but she's going to go through this process. It makes it a bit easier. Now, when children come back from a break and you ask the first question, you say, okay, good, you're ready to come back? All right, well, what did you do wrong? It's not in a harsh way. But when you ask the question, what did you do wrong? Some children, they don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. I said, well, maybe what you need to do is you need to go back and sit in the break again for a while until you're ready to talk about it, because we do need to talk about it. This is an adult skill. This is something that's very important. When you have an offense or a mistake or a sin or done something foolish, you need to be able to end the time well with other people. So it's important for children to be able to address this. So you might send them back to the break and let me know when you're ready to talk about it. We'll talk about it, and I'm going to ask you the same questions again. So in essence, what we're doing is training children to respond to these questions, because the questions take children through a godly process of what to do. They're not just questions for three-year-olds or five-year-olds. These are questions for adults. Teenagers need to be able to respond to this, and it's a great way to structure the conversation to end the discipline time in a positive way. That's what we call it, a positive conclusion.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, I have been thinking about this a lot because I'm working at the moment with a family that has a teenager son. And, you know, going through the break or going through the positive conclusion could be sometimes something they do or not. And I learned that by doing the positive conclusion and by talking about the mistakes that they do, children get to build this this sense of where the limits are, you know, in the longer term, and they get to understand that by sharing the things that they have done wrong and by talking about it really helps them to settle their heart and make them more calmer and better to connect with their parents, which is very important for children and also for parents at a certain age. I think it's important to have a clear conscience and to move on with the relationship so they are not stuck in that fight mode or in that uncomfortable feeling after you have a fight with your parents. So that's very important indeed. And Dr. Scott, I'll move on to the question number three, which I think it's also very important, because now, you know, question one and question two looks at the past and what happened in the past. What did you do wrong? Why was that wrong? But in question number three, we're moving and we're starting to look towards the future. And the question we can ask next is, what are you going to do differently next time? So from this moment on, we've put the past behind us. The child has put the past behind, and now we're thinking, okay, what's going to be next? If you've done this this something in a wrong way this time, how are you going to proceed with it in the future?
And when a child has to answer that question, what are you going to do differently next time, it helps them to actually move their mind into the next times of life, not just on the past mistake that they made. It's not just one positive conclusion that's going to change a child. It's the habit of doing it over and over again. Even as adults, we make mistakes and we say to ourselves, oh yeah, I'm going to do this next time. Oh, I'm going to do it right this time. And so we allow ourselves that grace and that freedom over time to rethink the actions that we're taking. So if you say to a child, what are you going to do differently next time? And he says, I'm going to talk about it instead of hitting. You say, that's a great response. I'm going to talk about it instead of hitting. That's a good thought for you. Okay, then what we're going to do is next time you find yourself in that situation, why don't you say that to yourself? I'm going to talk about it instead of hitting. And it's the continual use of the positive conclusion that helps children make those changes. So eventually they say, oh, I should talk about it instead of hitting. So the positive conclusion sets children up for success because it's focusing on where we're going, not just where we've been.
Yes, indeed. It's like a muscle we need to train. And through persevering with doing it, children and also us as adults can build that kind of response to these situations. Dr. Scott, in the beginning, mentioned about the three questions and a statement. Now we are at the end of the three questions, and I'm going to focus now on the statement. And the statement is, now go ahead and try again. This is something we will tell our children when we want them to do something. We want them to see practice doing something the right way. So if you had a child that has taken something away from another child, or if you had a child that was mean or spoken not a nice way to a sibling, you would ask them to repeat the action, but to repeat it in a nice way, in a positive way, in the way they actually should do it. And by actually doing that, you're helping them train. And just what we were mentioning earlier about the training, the practice that will change the response of the child in the end.
Yes, that's the practicing doing the right thing is really good. Now, sometimes when you're done with a correction time and you say to a child, okay, why don't you go try again? It's just sending them off into life, kind of like the story of the woman who was caught in adultery. Remember that story about how the leaders brought this woman caught in adultery to Jesus? And they were all about focusing on her past, her mistake, her sin. And Jesus' final response to her was, go and sin no more. I just love that, because what he's doing is he's saying to her, you're freed up now. Okay, we've worked this through. Go and do the right thing. And so I think sometimes we're just letting kids go and making that statement. Other times, because a child has this ingrained problem of being mean or somehow being obstinate or something, then we might say, let's go back and practice the right response now. Let's go back in the kitchen and you go ahead and ask me for a snack again. And I'm going to say no again. And let's see if you can respond the right way. So sometimes we complete this cycle, the repentance cycle, by actually practicing the right thing so that the child can start moving in that direction. And frankly, sometimes it's just a hypothetical or it's just made up practice such situation. We say, okay, brother, come on in here. Now, go ahead, brother, go ahead and take the CD out of your sister's hand here. Now, sister, you go ahead and respond the way we talked about. And so we kind of reenact it sometimes. Sometimes that's appropriate, sometimes not. But the point is we end the discipline time in a positive way, focusing on the next times, how we're going to do better than next times. And then the sense of forgiveness and moving on that, of course, God gives us when we come to him and we confess. And then we acknowledge that we want to follow him. So he does the same process with us. We've just turned it into a technique that we can use with children so that parents can train children on a deeper level on their hearts to move forward in a good way.
Yes, and if emotions run high at some point and still towards the end of the positive conclusion, you feel that there's still some sort of something in the air that's not, you know, that needs to be cleared up. Having a moment to apologize or to say sorry or to ask for forgiveness, it's also something very important. And perhaps with younger children, it's easier to do that because sometimes you can actually ask them to say sorry or please forgive me. And I think with older children can be a bit more challenging. And it probably needs to happen from their own heart that they feel and they want to say those things. But I think it's important for children to learn to apologize and to learn to say sorry and to ask for forgiveness. And because that really humbles them, also makes them release that, you know, that negative emotion that they have, and also builds and rebuilds the relationship. Dr. Scott, what do you think about that? What do you think about apologizing or asking for forgiveness as, you know, as something that can be done at the end of the positive conclusion?
Yeah, when the positive conclusion is done, there's sometimes we have to have reconciliation, we have to have restitution, we have to have some kind of an apology that might be made. But what I try to do, I was talking to a 12-year-old boy recently, and I said, would you like to know what a mature apology looks like? Because I said, you know, saying sorry like you just did with your brother, that's more like a third grade apology. But I can show you what a mature apology looks like. Go through the positive conclusion and let's take all three of those questions and a statement. And I'll show you how to turn those into a mature apology. The first thing you say is, Dad, if we're talking to Dad, I was wrong when I, and you fill in the blank. I was wrong when I yelled at you. I realized that was wrong because, we're now on the second question, because it was being disrespectful. If I find myself in that situation again, I won't yell, but I'll talk nicely, or I'll be quiet, whatever. So would you please forgive me? Now that is instead of saying at the end, go and sin no more, you're free to go, the child can say, will you forgive me? And that becomes this mature apology that has a powerful influence on the person who's listening. When you use that kind of an apology that it admits fault and says it was wrong for this reason, and the next time I'm going to do this, then that just has a larger impact on a child. So I think we teach our children that kind of an apology. I don't think it's wrong to say I'm sorry, but sorrow is an emotion, and sometimes people don't feel regret or sorrow. To admit you're wrong, anybody can do that. So I prefer to go that route, but an apology of some sorts is often helpful when we're working with children and teaching them how to end conflict time. So being able to move in that direction certainly is a good idea.
Yes, absolutely. Such a powerful way to end the positive conclusion and to have that relationship restored and to have a look to the future again. So let me quickly go through all the questions and the statement for you again. And the first one is, what did you do wrong? So when you are at the end of the break and the child has returned and you are ready to start a positive conclusion, the first question you ask your child is, what did you do wrong? The second question is, why was that wrong? And then you are looking to go a bit deeper into and have an opportunity to tie the behavior of a child with the values that you are expecting them to do. The third question is, what are you going to do differently next time? And this gives them an opportunity to think about their behavior or think about the response they will have the next time. And the statement in the end is, go ahead and try again. And this is where we actually give them the opportunity to retry, to re-enter with a positive outlook and just to also do and practice what they're actually going to do in the future.
I think this is really important that parents recognize this one tool. It's just one tool of many that we use in our heart-based approach. And as folks, you listen to these podcasts, you're going to hear us talk more about the tools. Putting them all together, making them part of your repertoire as you parent can be a significant asset for you. It's all part of a heart-based approach. We're really trying to help children address life using a heart-based approach. And parents can do things in a heart-based approach to parenting that can contribute to the growth of a child's heart. If you like what you're hearing here, I just want to encourage you to subscribe to our podcast. Hit subscribe and you'll get regular updates about that so that you can know when our next episodes are coming out. And if you'd like to learn more about a heart-based approach, I'd encourage you to visit my website, which is biblicalparenting.org. And Elena, why don't you share your website too so that people can connect with you as well there.
Yeah, if you want to get in touch with me, please visit elenazhvetslot.com and follow Parenting is Hard Work on Facebook, LinkedIn, or Instagram, and I'll be more than happy to help you.
Hey, thanks, folks, for joining us today. We look forward to seeing you on our next episode as we continue on to talk about a heart-based approach to parenting.